salvation. All hope lies with him and none with me. Imagine though the shock from isolation, but he suddenly can hear and speak and see. See me, feel me, touch me, heal me. See me, feel me, touch me, heal me.
WRCT Pittsburgh, when it doesn't make any sense.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen.
For late nights writing English papers.
For your teen's music taste.
For dinners, where they talk more on their phone than with you.
For the first time, they call you mom.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen, and you can't imagine the reward.
To learn more about adopting a teen, visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
And, of course, your good friends here at 88.3 FM, WRCT Pittsburgh, which includes me. Seriously, I'm your good friend, am I not? Hopefully. I'm the Mockster, and guess what? Guess what? It's midnight. It is midnight. It's time for Midnight Mock here on 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh. Before I get into the mock, before I get in the mock. I want to remind you that Attic Records.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are very quickly approaching a full-scale European war between Russia and Ukraine. In just a period of a few hours, things went from U.S. intelligence believes a large invasion is coming within the next 48 hours, and then just a few hours later, bombings starting all over Ukraine by Russia, further Russian troops entering Ukraine, and we are now in the middle of a full-scale invasion of Ukraine by Russian President Vladimir Putin. There were still people, even up until minutes before, saying this is not likely to happen. It's not likely. It just doesn't seem like it's what Putin wants to do. And yet it is what's happening, and we are doing the best we can to keep up with all of the news, which is changing very quickly. Let's just start somewhere with the headline. Russia invades Ukraine in Europe's darkest hours since World War II, reported by Reuters. Russian forces invaded Ukraine Thursday, and understand that it was Wednesday night in the U.S., being 7 hours later in Ukraine. It was early Thursday morning. In a massed assault by land, sea, and air, the biggest attack by one state against another in Europe since World War II. Missiles rained down. Ukraine reported columns of troops pouring across its borders from Russia and Belarus and landing on the coast from the Black and Azov Seas. Ukrainian troops fought Russian forces along practically the entire border. Explosions were heard before dawn and throughout the morning in the capital, Kyiv. 3 million people in the city. Gunfire rattled, sirens blared, and the highway out of the city choked with traffic as residents fled. Russia attacks Ukraine. Peace in Europe shattered, as reported by the Associated Press. Russia launched a wide-ranging attack on Ukraine Thursday, hitting cities and bases with airstrikes or shelling. Civilians piled into trains and cars to flee. Ukraine's government said Russian tanks and troops rolled across the border in a full-scale war. Could rewrite the geopolitical order and whose fallout already reverberated around the world. In unleashing Moscow's most aggressive action since the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan in 1979, that's 43 years ago, Putin deflected global condemnation and cascading new sanctions. This is now starting to pull in other European countries in the sense of triggering NATO Article 4. Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, and other allies are holding consultations under NATO's Article 4 after Russia has attacked Ukraine. Under Article 4 of the NATO agreement, the allies can hold consultations whenever they feel the territorial integrity, political independence, or security of an ally is threatened. This is the next signal of what could be next, and what could be next would be, man, I mean, it would be something approximating the scope of a world war. And I don't want to be hyperbolic, but when we are talking about a full scale invasion by Russia of Ukraine, by Russia of Ukraine, and then we are talking about the surrounding allies, including Estonia and Lithuania, et cetera, getting involved. How can I not say we're talking about something approximating a world war? I was going to report to you today. U.S. warns full-scale invasion of Ukraine could be imminent. This was, again, in the afternoon yesterday, the story was, we believe the intelligence points in this direction. It could be coming. It could be 48 hours. And then within hours, it happened. Within hours, it happened. Biden warns Russia of further consequences after Putin's declaration. It's going to get very ugly, politically and economically. Biden issued a statement Wednesday night condemning Russia's President Vladimir Putin's announcement of a, quote, special military operation in Ukraine moments before Ukrainian cities were bombarded by Russian missile strikes. Consider that there were people up. And I mean, some this morning are still saying it, but there were people up until last night saying everything Putin is doing is justified, because by not ruling out that Ukraine will ever join NATO, Putin is justified in everything. The invasion, the bomb, everything. Got some real, real problems out there. Putin sent in troops disguised with white peace monitor symbols and Ukrainian officials. Folks, it's a full invasion. Troops entering the country from Belarus were reportedly disguising themselves in Ukrainian military and police uniforms. We have various locations of where explosions were heard. We have a map up on the screen. And as you can see, it's basically the entire country. As of this morning, the western piece of Ukraine, which borders Romania, Hungary, Slovakia, has not yet seen explosions. But you have locations where CNN heard explosions, and then locations where local residents reported explosions. CNN reporting that the Ukrainian Interior Ministry says they have experienced hundreds of casualties from just the first missile strikes. Hundreds already killed in Ukraine.
The vibrations, obviously those attacks, those missile strikes coming in much closer. And here's the sort of news that we've got from you. Defense officials saying that this is now, and this is a quote I'm getting from the president's office at the moment, a full-blown nationwide attack with military infrastructure that is being attacked nationwide. So the emphasis being on the military infrastructure that they say is coming under attack. We've also spoken to, again, our contact at the Interior Ministry, an Interior Ministry official, saying that across the country, as a result of these attacks, there are hundreds of casualties. Now, we don't know how many of those people are dead, how many are injured, or whether that figure is accurate. But we do know that the Interior Ministry of Ukraine is putting the number of casualties so far in this nationwide assault, missile assault at this stage, for the most part, in the hundreds.
And I apologize. I said hundreds dead. Casualties does not necessarily mean dead. It means injured or dead. And we're still going to be standing by to learn more about that. But it is not looking particularly good. The plan now is for more sanctions, more sanctions. World expresses outrage, plans stronger Russia sanctions, as reported by the Associated Press. World leaders today reacted to the invasion with vows of unprecedented sanctions. And we will focus in more on the sanctions in another segment. We have incredible video from Kyiv's central train station, just flooded with people trying to get out of the city, desperation rising. And we're showing that video to our audience, just people desperate to get out. There are reports of troops coming into Ukraine, Russian troops from all sides. CNN has video of troops crossing the border of Belarus into Ukraine. That's one direction from which they are entering. There are reports of Russian military forces entering Ukraine from Crimea, making that invasion from 8 years ago all the more relevant today. This is going to be painful for Russia. I mean, the Russian stock market down 40%. It's you know, if retaliation really gets going, and Ukraine says there has been some, we don't know the full scope of it yet. It is going to be painful for Russia, but it's not clear Putin cares. Ukraine's military says its air defense did shoot down a Russian plane in eastern Ukraine. Ukraine is saying anyone who's ready and able to hold a weapon can join territorial defense forces, and understand that the Russians will want to persuade Ukraine to surrender. And not only are they launching a multi-origin, multi-platform attack, they are also likely to use disinformation, fake video and fake photos to encourage that Ukrainian surrender. And the next several days could be some of the most insane we have seen on this planet geopolitically. I don't even know since when, in a very, very long time. And the threats are now starting to come to the United States. Russia is now threatening American assets in response to the first round of sanctions, Let's start there. Business Insider reporting, Russia threatens to target sensitive U.S. assets as part of a strong and painful response to U.S. sanctions. Its Foreign Affairs Ministry said the sanctions were an attempt to change Russia's course. There should be no doubt that sanctions will receive a strong response. Russia's Foreign Affairs Ministry said the country would target sensitive American assets in retaliation. The ministry said this is part of America's the sanctions are part of America's ongoing attempts to change Russia's course. Russia has proved that despite all the sanctions cost, it is able to minimize the damage. And even more so, sanctions pressure is not able to affect our determination to firmly defend our interests. It added, there should be no doubt that sanctions will receive a strong response, not necessarily symmetrical, but finely tuned and painful to the American side. The United States, on the other hand, plans to continue escalating the sanctions. I don't even pretend to know where this will end, but it is very clear that all along, you know, we had reports which said, here's what we know, here's what could happen, and then here's a less bad scenario. Just about every element of this so far has been closer to the worst case scenario. Now, obviously, there were people talking about nuclear war as a worst case scenario. I don't believe that will happen. I don't believe we're going in that direction. I think that's quite literally, it would be a suicide decision by Putin and Russia. But from the sort of more reasonable, could this be trying to take a little bit of territory? Could this escalate into bombing Kyiv? It's all going in the worst direction. And economically, it's also already doing significant damage. Understand also, by the way, that Russia has changed its tune on the sanctions pretty quickly. I mean, 2 days ago, Russia was saying, we don't care about sanctions. They're not really going to do anything. Now Russia is saying the sanctions are painful and we are going to retaliate specifically for the sanctions. So it should not be lost on us that Russia has changed its opinion of the sanctions as stated. So that's the latest that we know at this point. Within 2 hours, things may have changed. We will, of course, be live later with the latest. And you can find me on Twitter at @dpacman and let me know your latest thoughts on what's taking place. The David Pakman Show depends on your support to fund what we do. The best way to do it, the most direct way to support our work, is to get a membership on our website, joinpakman.com. You can use the coupon code WOW22 for a discount if you so please. We also have a great David Pakman Show subreddit where nearly 35,000 of our viewers are engaging in polite, respectful, non-trolling discussion of political issues. You can join the discussion at davidpakman.com/reddit. Many interesting posts I spotted, including some people apologizing for having fallen for Tulsi Gabbard. Here's one post from a user who says, as a veteran of two foreign wars, I took the bait for her scam, hook, line, and sinker. I'm anti-war, and I supported that message. I'm guilty of falling for it and want to apologize to Sir Pakman. Well, I have not been knighted, so no reason to say sir. Yeah, I mean, listen, you don't have to apologize to me. It's just, I think it would be great at this point that Tulsi has gone full mask off defending Russia over the last couple of days and just crazy, crazy. Check out my Twitter for some of her recent wacky statements. It's just great to realize if you were duped, you were duped, and know you are susceptible to being duped. And that will hopefully protect you better in the future. That, I think, is what, you know, I don't need an apology. It's just, let's all recognize, how did it happen and how can I prevent myself, inoculate myself from being duped again? Another user says, get you someone who speaks to you the way David speaks to the people from Europe. I love when we get calls from Europe. I find it interesting. I find it interesting that we have people in other countries that pay attention to the show. And if it's a part of Europe I've been to, I love reminiscing about when I used to travel to Europe, which has not happened for some time, other than the Spain trip, which sort of went horribly wrong a few months ago, but we don't really talk about that anymore. But we love our callers from the United States as well, of course. They make up the majority of our audience. Lastly, another user on the subreddit points out, why do I get so many right-wing shorts on YouTube? Almost everyone I'm subscribed to is liberal, but almost all my shorts are right-wing. Not saying I just want to be in a left-wing bubble, but it's kind of weird. This is not... So here's what's going on with YouTube shorts. It's mostly right-wingers producing YouTube shorts. YouTube shorts is a new short-form vertical video format, similar to Instagram Reels, similar to TikToks. And it is mostly being used on YouTube by the right wing. So we started producing shorts a couple months ago, and we are continuing to build. And I encourage every other left-wing show, start producing and publishing shorts. We can't let the right control the format. And the reason you're getting so many right-wing shorts is it's mostly right-wingers producing them. And we're now doing one or two a day, and we're going to keep going with it. We can't cede these platforms to the right. Join the discussion on the David Pakman Show subreddit, davidpakman.com/reddit. All right. I want to talk about what I guess we're calling the alt-left on the topic of Ukraine and Russia. I got a question during a live stream recently, which was basically, how did I and a streamer named Hassan Piker end up with such different opinions of the Russian invasion of Ukraine? Now, I don't have the answer to that specific question, but I want to more generally address that there is a contingent of people who claim to be on the left, and that includes folks like Glenn Greenwald, Matt Taibbi, and Tulsi Gabbard, and others, who have a very different perspective on Ukraine-Russia from what I would call kind of the mainline progressive left, of which I am a part. Now, some of you will say, David, your entire premise is flawed. Those people aren't really on the left. I grant you, there's a real question as to whether these people are actually on the left. I mean, they're extremely reactionary in much of what they say. But let's put that aside for now, because they're ostensibly on the left. They sort of claim to be and are considered by many to be on the left. Let's call it the alt-left, and you decide whether they are on the left or are not. And for our purposes, we'll be open to the idea that they are on the left. Also, I think it's important to mention, some are like, why aren't you just talking about tankies, the so-called revolutionary left? This is a different group. The alt-left, like Tulsi, is not what would pejoratively be described as a tankie. She's something else. And so that's why we're looking for a different name, and we're calling it the alt-left. I believe there is often one real story, and sometimes terms like bias, alternative facts, and narrative are used to create doubt about whether you've been misled or sold a fake story, and that there's a true, real story that you're not getting. And there's the usual suspects that are blamed. Now, sometimes there really are competing narratives with elements of truth, and we have to be very, very involved in sort of ascertaining what the truth is. On Russia, I believe there is one story, and that story can be detailed and contain nuance, and that's fine. Vladimir Putin's decision to invade Ukraine is the principal aggression in this scenario. Putin has had territorial ambitions for reasons of ego, economics, and geopolitics for decades. He hasn't made those territorial ambitions a secret. He is obsessed with Ukraine for reasons we outlined on the Monday bonus show, including this sort of vague nostalgia for the USSR, as well as resource and economy and geography related reasons. He's now acting on them, period. Russia invaded Ukraine. Russia isn't respecting Ukraine's border sovereignty. And Putin is now pushing into Kyiv with the bombings that started overnight. Applied anywhere else, no one would accept the idea that, listen, it's legitimate to recognize the separatists in another country as independent, and then send in tanks to protect them, and then start bombing Kyiv, and it's not an invasion. We wouldn't accept that in almost any other scenario. In addition, the situation is more complicated, because it is true that Russia might, in a real way, in a genuine way, see NATO's willingness to defend Ukraine and NATO's eastward expansion as a sign of aggression. I'm not denying that Russia could very well see it that way. It doesn't change that Russia invaded Ukraine, is shelling all over the country, sending troops in through Belarus, Crimea, etc., and not respecting the simple border sovereignty of Ukraine that they are supposed to respect. Great. But the alt-left doesn't agree with that. Now, I'm going to do my best to accurately represent different perspectives from the alt-left, but they include, for example, that the entire government, intelligence, and media apparatus is lying about what happened. This is a very common theme from the alt-left. And again, the alt-left has hammers, and so everything looks like nails to the alt-left. You can't trust the media generically, even though the media means 100 different things. You can't trust intelligence because sometimes intelligence has been wrong. You can't trust world leaders about what's going on. And this often includes more specific counter stories like this is actually Joe Biden's fault. NATO is to blame as an imperialist force that has overreached. Putin is just defending his country, stuff like that. They said the threat from Putin is overblown. He has no real interest in invading. He doesn't plan to. It's a lie you've been sold by the fear-mongering, bloodthirsty government intel media apparatus for attention, posturing, the military-industrial complex, and clicks, but no invasion is coming. We know that was wrong. These are very clearly bogus takes, not based in evidence, and we now have the benefit of hindsight to see how wrong they were. The Biden administration did something smart. Counter to what happened in 2014 with Crimea, Biden came out and said for a while, our intelligence shows a buildup of troops on the border, which signals maybe Putin wants to invade. And then Biden said, our intelligence is that Putin has made the decision to invade. And then yesterday they said, we have intelligence that there will be a full scale invasion within 48 hours. It all happened. It all happened. And then Biden was on record saying this is the plan. And that allows us to say, hey, you know what? We were getting two different stories and one was correct. And the alt left was very, very wrong. All along, the Biden administration was detailing exactly what was happening in the expected timeline, and it came true. Now, another alt left trope is Biden wants war. Biden did this. He warned us as part of saber rattling to gin up support for a war. And everybody other than the alt-left wants that war. First of all, no, we don't. I mean, find one clip of me saying anything, even indirectly alluding to the vague desire for any kind of war. No, we don't want war. Secondly, Biden has said no troops on the ground. And he's sticking to it. Now, if he changes his mind, I'll tell you. But people like Matt Taibbi and Glenn Greenwald and Tulsi have talked and alluded to this desire for war that Biden and the media and everybody but them have, which people like them are against. So like Matt Taibbi tweeted, I have a long record of being critical of Putin. This troll fantasy that I'm pro-Putin comes from reporting correctly that Russiagate was fake and opposing U.S. intervention of Ukraine. That doesn't make me pro-Putin any more than opposing the Iraq war made me a Saddam lover. He insists he's just against Ukrainian intervention. Everybody else wants it. Well, Biden also, by the definition that we're talking about, sending troops, is against intervention and is sticking to it. Now, of course, I am the first to tell you we are increasingly engaged in a proxy war along with our allies. I just want to tell you what things are. I have no interest in hiding that from you. We're arming Ukraine. We're sanctioning. It's increasingly a proxy war against Russia. Fine. But the idea of this bloodthirsty ground war that Biden is determined to launch. No. Tulsi, similarly, pretending, you know, there's some kind of bloodlust from Biden and Harris, tweeting Biden Harris tell us we must bear the cost to defend freedom in Ukraine. But while you and your family struggle with higher gas prices, the power elite won't suffer at all. And if the conflict goes nuclear, they'll be safe in cushy, massive bunkers while you and your loved ones fry. No, she was wrong about all of it. I mean, it's harder to find. Alex Berenson was like the wrongest man in the world on the pandemic. Tulsi has been like the wrongest American on Russia, Ukraine. And then here's Glenn Greenwald, who tweeted, whenever war emerges, there is an intense surge of nationalism in the U.S. People across the spectrum unify. The media speaks in almost lockstep. So I'm sure the polls will indicate approval for now. But I really wonder how much Americans are willing to sacrifice for Ukraine. Again, no one's talking about that. Certainly not Biden. Certainly not mainline progressive leftists like me. It was a lie. So the alt-left is very misguided. They got a big boost in 2016. That's when the alt-left really started to get built up. The origins of the alt-left are heavily based in the idea that Trump is uniquely the fault of the left. There are these folks who started saying in 2016, Hillary's just as bad as Trump. Then Trump won, and they said it's the fault of the left for their narrative and their selection of people like Hillary. They insisted the Trump-Russia stuff was all made up and that Trump's wrongdoing wasn't important. They never blamed the outrageous, ignorant, reactionary, extremist right-wingers who actually voted for Trump. They blamed the left, but not those right-wingers. And this has carried them through now to their takes on Ukraine, Russia. So that's what's going on. They're wrong. I'm bored by them. If you want, you know, and I say this because there's so many people telling me I should have those views. Just go watch those other shows. Read those other people. It's not what we do here. This just isn't an alt-left show. So rather than wasting time emailing me, telling me I should adopt Glenn Greenwald and Tulsi's views, just go listen. You don't have to watch this show. It's optional. It's a free country, as so many people like to say. Just tune me out if that's what you're looking for. We'll have more coverage of this on our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. On what is quickly becoming an historic day, or a historic day, depending on your grammatical preference, it's great to be joined by Bill Scheer, who's a contributor to The Washington Monthly, Real Clear Politics, Politico. Bill, you know, I let's not immediately include the Ukraine-Russia situation in our conversation and sort of start with, like, if this weren't going on, what would your thoughts have been on where the 2022 midterms seem to be looking in terms of who's going to control the House and Senate after November? And then maybe we'll integrate the question about Russia, Ukraine.
Well, you know, in one respect, you would say things don't look good for Democrats. Obviously, anytime the president's party is facing a midterm, it tends to not go great. We've had 36 midterms since the Civil War, and the president's party loses House seats in 33 of those 36. Now, of course, a lot of those times they don't lose control of Congress because the margins are bigger, but now the margin is 5. So even the slightest loss, you risk losing control. And if Biden's at the same job approval in November as he is today, which is about 42%, that's not going to be a good midterm. Having said that, there are those three exceptions. And there's also a fourth exception where the Democrats lost less than 5 seats. That was 1962. So those four exceptions are 1934, 1962, 1998, 2002. So what's the thread in those exceptions? 34 is FDR's first term. He's tackling the Great Depression. 62, Cuban Missile Crisis is solved 10 days before the midterm. 1998, Republicans are moving towards impeaching Bill Clinton, and there's a lot of talk in the air of constitutional crisis. And 2002, we're still in the shadow of 9/11. Crisis is the thread of those four exceptions. If you're in the president's party and there's a crisis, and you're seen as handling that crisis well,
right,
you can beat those odds.
Right.
Now, as it stands today, we have, again, not counting Ukraine, two big crises that are intertwined, the pandemic and inflation. Today, Biden is not seen as handling those well. So that's not becoming a plus. It is certainly possible that by November, the pandemic's going to look a lot better and inflation's going to look a lot better. We can't say for certain today. I mean, Omicron is definitely already winding down, and we just don't know if another new variant is going to kick up between now and then it's going to throw us for another loop. But Ukraine is a third crisis. And again, one cannot glibly say, oh, Biden's going to take care of this fantastically. It's a very, very complicated problem. And even the most fantastic president might not handle it in the most perfect of ways.
Add to that, Bill, I mean, no matter what Biden does, Republicans will blame him. I mean, they're already doing it. Last night, Trump with Laura Ingraham saying the problem here is Biden and the rigged election and people coming over the U.S.-Mexico border. That he said that's the cause of what's happening in Russia-Ukraine. You have a bunch of people already saying it's his fault. And to some degree, that may stick, at least in some voters' minds.
Well, let's not completely assume that it's going to be the unanimous Republican message that Biden is a weak leader and this is all his fault.
Certainly no, that's true.
Is out there pushed by Trump. I'm not even going to argue that there's a better than even odds that Republicans won't do that. They very well could. But there is division in the Republican Party on a number of fronts, and certainly Ukraine is one of those issues, and policy versus Russia is one of those issues. One thing I think could help Biden and Democrats, you know, both with Ukraine and beyond, is to play up bipartisanship. The reason why the president's party usually does poorly in midterms is you get a pendulum swing because the governing party has to govern. Governing is difficult. You have to make compromises. You can't deliver on everything that your base wants to see in the platform. Unexpected crises occur. All these things put stress on a diverse governing coalition, and the opposition can put aside their differences and just focus on how much they hate you. That's the normal order of midterm business. But we already have secured some bipartisan victories, the biggest one being the infrastructure bill. There are some smaller ones along with that. And this is done with the help of Mitch McConnell, which has made Donald Trump very mad. Donald Trump actively attacks Mitch McConnell for helping Biden.
Yeah.
And we've seen Biden give conflicting messages on this score. Sometimes he wants to say, oh, we would do a lot better if these Republicans weren't obstructing us. And sometimes he says, we're making Washington work and getting things done. And I would lean more towards that latter message than the former, because one, it shows you are getting things done. Electing us has been good for you. We've done some good things, even if things aren't perfect in the universe. And it drives wedges through the opposition. So you want to be unified yourself and divide the other guys.
Right.
And if Biden can do things with Ukraine that pull in the more hawkish anti-Putin types in the Republican Party, the Lindsey Grahams, the Marco Rubios, the Mitch McConnells, if it can make it uncomfortable for them to side with Trump, that's going to further help reverse the normal trajectory of a midterm.
I can't help but think that if the last 4 days were not what they have been with Ukraine, Russia, there would be many discussions like the ones my audience was having prior to that point. Like, for example, if Biden can only forgive some student loans between now and November, if Biden can decriminalize cannabis federally between now and November, these types of things, which it quite frankly doesn't seem Biden has any interest at all in doing. Many in my audience feel very strongly that that would have a significant impact on the outcome of the midterms. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, you got to do two things. I mean, unifying the party and splitting the opposition requires two things. You got to do something to energize your own base.
Yes.
And you got to don't take your eye off the swing. The swing still exists. Doing both those things is complicated. And there's inherent tensions there. I don't know if doing what the things you suggest, which are executive order things, which may go beyond what Biden thinks is actually constitutional or
yes.
legal, and would be at minimum probably subject to litigation, that might not be in Biden's comfort zone. I do think it would be greatly helpful to get some significant piece of what was called Build Back Better passed, to let that progressive base know, hey, this wasn't a waste of your time getting us elected. We've done some things that are significance here. Right now, the progressive base is feeling that they've gotten the short end of the stick, and I understand that. And I do think you got to give them something. And so I see folks more inclined to think about what can Biden do by himself, because I don't trust Joe Manchin or Kyrsten Sinema to do anything helpful. But whatever it is, I think it needs to be something that can get done and will stick.
Yes.
So that progressive base feels like they got something out of this.
Part of why, as you laid out, it's not looking great for Democrats in November are these historical realities that you laid out very clearly regarding the 36 midterms since the Civil War. The other part of it that I am very strongly paying attention to is that it doesn't really seem Democrats are doing anything particularly helpful to themselves in many ways. And so I'm sort of looking for help from Republicans in hurting themselves. And one of the things I'm looking at that I think is probably okay for Democrats is this sort of civil war aspect of what's going on in the Republican Party. You've got, it used to be just pro and anti-Trump, but now you've got the never Trump, the pro-Trump, and the formerly pro-Trump, which are increasingly sort of making some noise. It seems to me, absent any great strategy from Democrats, I welcome that sort of infighting. And it sounds like you're saying, in general, division on the opposite side is a good thing.
Oh, absolutely. And there's certainly things that could happen with Trump's very aggressive involvement in Republican primaries,
right,
that's going to be hurtful to Republicans. And we can't know. You know, it's possible Trump backs a lunatic and that lunatic wins the primary and wins the general election, which is, of course, not good. I mean, but we have examples in very recent past where Republicans have nominated people that threw away winnable seats. You know, Christine O'Donnell in Delaware, Todd Akin in Missouri, Richard Murdoch in Indiana. You know, this is all pre-Trump. And Trump's now getting very involved in all sorts of races, Senate and House and governor. You know, one of the big, you know, difficult races for Democrats is going to be Georgia, where Raphael Warnock is holding on to a seat very tenuously. And you got Trump pushing Herschel Walker, who's got a whole litany of scandals in his past.
Yep.
And encouraging a bloody political civil war between Brian Kemp and David Perdue. And if you, there's a book coming out called Flip by Greg Bluestein. It's not quite out yet. It hasn't been published yet, but I just wrote a book review of it. So it's on my mind. I mean, the things that Republicans did in Georgia in the run-up to 2020 are just comically ridiculous and self-defeating. You know, Democrats did a lot of things right. Republicans did a lot of things wrong. And Democrats just barely won those races. So it's very possible that Trump's going to lead Republicans down a very bad path and throw away opportunities for them.
At this point, specifically the discussions of the election was stolen. Who does that help and hurt in your calculation?
I mean, look at Georgia. That hurt Republicans in Georgia in 2020 for the runoffs.
Yeah.
We know that turnout went down in very red conservative rural areas, particularly in the place where Trump held rallies between the November election and the January runoff. So I don't know if that will replicate in 2022, but that is a risk for Republicans. If Trump poisons the well and tells folks that things are still rigged, that can hurt them. Now, another issue with 2022 is who's going to win these Secretary of State primaries? How many Secretary of State races are these issues going to be front and center? And how does that impact turnout? Are they going to get pushed above the fold and be more prominent? Do they unify the Trumpian right and energize their base? Or do they alienate those? I mean, like in Georgia, there was white, college-educated, Romney-type voters that were appalled
right
by what Trump was doing, and they moved to the Democrats.
Yep.
So there is that risk for Republicans there as well.
In terms of some of the factions on the left, you know, for a while there's been, pejoratively, they're called tankies. I think a less pejorative term is the revolutionary left. And, you know, they're kind of like Nicolas Maduro's good and cool, and Castro, Cuba, it's cool. And they were sort of like pro-Putin. But there's now this other faction that I call the alt-left. Like, for example, Glenn Greenwald and Tulsi Gabbard, they're not revolutionary left, but they certainly seem to be this alt-left thing. They were saying Putin's not going to invade, all this stuff. Are these factions, how sizable do you think these factions are in terms of the people that actually vote? And the reason I ask it that way is, in the 2020 Democratic primary, if you looked on Reddit and Twitter, you would have dramatically overestimated the level of support for someone like Bernie But when it came to voting in the primary, that was not where the Democratic Party was at the time. So, like, how big do you think these factions are?
Well, I mean, I think the Bernie faction is a whole lot bigger than the Tulsi faction.
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt.
I mean, I think Greenwald has really discredited himself amongst much of the left. Like, he's really what he's held on to is, you know, Tulsi left, which is a splinter.
Yeah.
You know, he's mostly celebrated on the right these days than the left. So, I mean, there is this sort of horseshoe, you know, dynamic where there are people that have these kind of mix of positions, and they're generally, you know, anti-deep state, anti-American establishment, anti-industrial complex establishment. They lump a lot of things into that rubric to the point where they go as far as, say, as Greenwald apparently is arguing, that this isn't really an invasion, that America brought this on because, I mean, there's a Jackman article saying, well, that's a little not as complimentary to Putin as some others, but saying, well, it's not all Putin's fault, because we wouldn't do the compromise where we say Ukraine can't be in NATO. And I understand there's certainly times in life where you do some strategic ambiguity to avoid conflict.
Yep.
But it's pretty clear that Ukraine has a good reason to want to be in NATO, because Putin is hell-bent on occupying them. They want that protection so they don't get obliterated. And so it's just hard for me to take that out of the equation when looking at the situation. So, I mean, those voices are out there. They're certainly easy to hear in social media because they're loud.
Right.
But as far as their impact electorally, I think it's very small.
Yeah. And it seems the effect is more getting those people to stay home, because it's sort of like in the 2016, the alt-left in 2016 often seemed to argue it's kind of irrelevant whether it's Trump or Hillary. And to me, it seemed less about it turned votes from Hillary to Trump than it just made some people stay home who probably would have voted for Hillary.
Yeah. And we didn't have that in 2020. I mean, people were angry enough at Trump that whatever their idiosyncratic foreign policy views were, or whatever their concerns about how moderate Biden would be, that became secondary to stopping Trump. I mean, you
right.
have the classics, you know, you put aside your differences and you unify around the common enemy. And look, dealing with Ukraine, it's not going to be necessarily easy to unite a broad swath of America around whatever policy we adopt, because it's particularly if we're doing something that is somewhat aggressive, and no one's talking about, you know, troops on the ground, of course, but even economic sanctions could get blowback, where Russia does economic things to us or cyber attacks on us and
yep.
creates disruption and discomfort within America. It's not a given that the average American is going to appreciate that and believe that this is worth the sacrifice that we're doing. It's going to take rhetorical effort on the part of, and this is where bipartisanship would help. You know, as much as you and I might really think Marco Rubio is appalling or Lindsey Graham was appalling, just as a matter of politics,
yeah.
if Biden is saying, we got to take these actions to check Putin, and it's going to mean some hurt at the pump, it's going to mean some complications with our cyber infrastructure, we're going to do our best to counter it, but you got to expect it's going to be hard sometimes. If a Rubio and a Graham and a McConnell giving Biden cover and saying he's doing the right thing, that's going to mitigate the ability for those on, like, you know, alt-left types who are going to, or Tucker Carlson types, are going to try to push into the media bloodstream, why are we doing this? Biden is making you pay $5 at the pump for what, Ukraine? Why should you care about that? People on the fringes are going to push that argument, and it's an argument that can have some traction.
Yeah.
So in that respect, they're relevant players, even if they're not necessarily electorally large. And the more diverse cover Biden has for whatever actions he takes, the better he's going to be able to withstand that and try to get the American people on his side.
Well, the next 5 days, both in terms of what happens in Ukraine, Russia, and then up to and including what Biden chooses to say at a State of the Union address, are definitely going to be worth following. We've been speaking with Bill Scheer, contributor to The Washington Monthly, Real Clear Politics, Politico. Bill, always great having you on.
Great to talk to you. Take care.
the deranged hellscape that is the modern American right wing just continues to get worse. I want to look at a couple of data points for you guys. Last night, quite literally, as Vladimir Putin and Russia started bombing in Ukraine, sending missiles to Kyiv and Kharkiv and all over the country, quite literally, Donald Trump again praised Vladimir Putin, this time at a very strange speech he gave at his own Mar-a-Lago resort. Now, yesterday, I brought you the clip of Donald Trump saying on this podcast hosted by Buck Sexton and another guy, Trump saying that Putin was savvy and smart and genius for what he did to Ukraine. And some people said, David, that was taken out of context. Well, Trump doubled down on it again. Here is Donald Trump at a Mar-a-Lago event last night saying Putin is smart. He's taken a country over for $2 worth of sanctions. I'd say that's pretty smart. Take a look at this.
Trump said Putin is smart. I mean, he's taken over a country for $2 worth of sanctions. I'd say that's pretty smart.
Trump is saying, yeah, it is smart. It is smart. Trump's actually responding to the people who said, wow. To Buck Sexton, Trump said how smart Putin is. That's crazy. And Trump is going, it is smart. What Putin's doing is smart. Now, I understand in this clip, he's not saying I support it, but he's clearly enamored with the authoritarian nature of Putin, as we've known for years.
He's taking over a country, really a vast location, a great piece of land with a lot of people. And
it's just great real estate that Putin's getting for $2 of sanctions.
Just walking right in. This would have never happened ever in a million years. Would have never happened. And I know him very well. I know him probably almost as well as I know anybody in this room other than Doc Ronnie.
Well, if Trump really has the relationship with Putin that he claims to have, and if this really would never have happened if Trump was currently in power, why doesn't Trump just call Putin and say, hey, it's time to lay off Ukraine? I mean, if Trump wants us to believe that Putin respects Trump, Trump wants us to believe that Putin listens to Trump and that Trump has power over Putin. Well, if you don't like what he's doing, just call him and say, hey, it's time to lay off. And of course, the answer is either because Trump doesn't have that relationship with Putin or because he likes what Vladimir Putin is doing. Now, he's certainly impressed with it. I don't think Trump cares at all about Ukraine. I think Trump is probably indifferent about Putin invading Ukraine. Trump doesn't care about Ukrainians or Ukraine. But he can't just say, I love the invasion. Instead, he has to just talk about how smart Vladimir Putin is. Imagine for a second, by the way, if Trump was president when this was going on. It would be like another rehash of when Trump met with Putin in Helsinki and asked him about the hacking, where he's like, oh, Putin denied it very strongly. I just spoke to Putin and he says the invasion is fine. I asked him, did you do anything wrong? And he said, sir, no, everything we're doing in Ukraine is okay. And he said it very strongly. It was Putin was very strong on it. So I believe him, the invasion's fine. That's what would be going on. And if you think this is bonkers, just wait until we look at these next series of clips. Last night, as the missiles were raining down in Ukraine from Russia, Kyiv, all over the country, as Russian troops were pouring in from Belarus and in from Crimea and over into the Donetsk and Luhansk, as all of this is happening, Trump goes on Fox News, is interviewed by Laura Ingraham, and says, this all happened because of the rigged election. I mean, guys, let's just listen. Look,
probably ever we were
President
energy
Trump,
independent, and he blew it.
We're just learning that U.S. officials are looking at a potential amphibious landing now in Odessa, Ukraine. Again, a month ago or 3 weeks ago, all the so-called experts were saying that, you know, Putin was probably going to just be content with staying in those separatist regions. But I think given what's unfolded, sadly, with a lot of weakness in the United States, they just decided to go for it.
Right. I mean, so Laura tees it up and says Putin probably. So like they were so wrong about the intelligence, these people, we had all the intel and it's like, it really looks like they're planning an invasion. They're like, no. And now they're saying, well, we were wrong, but because we didn't think the U.S. would be so weak to cause the invasion. And Trump just teased it. You know, she teased it up and Trump hits it out of the park as far as they're concerned.
It looks like they're going for it. And where does that leave NATO, the NATO alliance?
I think you're exactly right. I think that's what happened. He was going to be satisfied with a peace, and now he sees the weakness and the incompetence and the stupidity of this administration. And as an American, I'm angry about it, and I'm saddened by it. And it all happened because of a rigged election. This would have never happened. And that includes inflation, and that includes millions of people pouring in on a monthly basis, far more than 3 million people. And they're coming from 129 different countries.
Wait a second. So Putin's invading Russia because you falsely believe the election was stolen from you and undocumented immigrants from Latin America are coming to the United States? This is a bizarre foreign policy analysis.
We have no idea what's happening, and they're destroying our country.
President Trump, we actually have, just hold on. I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but we have, we're going to the...
Yeah, they're going to something. So moments later, this is just incredible. Moments later, Trump seems to think that Laura Ingraham told him that the U.S. has launched an attack on Ukraine. And Trump's like, you shouldn't have said that. And Laura Ingraham has to say, no. The Russians launched an amphibious attack on Ukraine. Guys, Trump seems to think that the story is the U.S. invaded Ukraine.
Monitor this, continue to monitor his statements. We'll go back to President Trump for a quick reaction. We had a kind of a really pathetic display from the Ukrainian President Zelensky earlier today, President Trump, where he in Russian, he doesn't like to speak Russian, but in Russian, he was essentially imploring Vladimir Putin not to invade his country. And now we basically have the Ukrainian ambassador to the United Nations looking like a defeated man.
All right, you guys ready for this? Listen to this.
Your final reaction.
Well, I think the whole thing, again, would have never happened. It shouldn't happen. And it's a very sad thing. But you know what's also very dangerous is you told me about the amphibious attacks by Americans. You shouldn't be saying that because you and everybody else shouldn't know about it. They should do that secretly, not be doing that through the great Laura Ingraham. They should be doing that secretly.
God.
Nobody should know that, Laura. And, you know,
that was the Russian. Those are the Russian amphibious landing.
I thought you said that we were sending people in.
No. U.S. officials. She said U.S. officials, you know, are seeing that there's an amphibious attack happening. Imagine being so dazed and clueless that in the midst of Russia invading Ukraine and the U.S. clearly being on the side that Russia is in the wrong, as a former president, you believe that what's happening is the U.S. has launched an amphibious attack and invasion of Ukraine. Guys, we're screwed. We're screwed. Here's one last very strange segment from this interview.
If any Western nation or any nation intervenes with this Russian military action?
Well, this is something that should have never happened. This would not have happened during my administration. In fact, some people were saying, why didn't this take place over the last 4 years during our administration? And it didn't for a very good reason. And I'll explain that to you someday.
Very soon, the evidence is going to come forward about why this invasion did not take place. One day, Trump will explain why it didn't take place under his watch. Unhinged, global laughingstock. The level of aggression of Putin is matched only by the level of ignorance of Donald Trump at the same time as this invasion is going on. We have a voicemail number, and that number is 219-2-DAVID-P. Earlier in the week said I'm no longer going to be apologizing and explaining things to the 5% of my audience that needs things to be explained and disclaimed. Here's a caller who says, David, I hate to break it to you. It's not 5% of your audience. 20% of your audience is that dumb. I disagree, but here's the caller.
Do you think that it's only 5% of your audience who requires your, what you consider to be over-explaining, David?
Yeah, about five.
Number one, you're not really over-explaining. Not by a long shot.
You know what's funny? This guy is in that 5%. This is a caller who has a called after I say things like, I'm not for aggression and boots on the ground. You know, I give all the disclaimers. This is a guy who has called in completely ignoring everything I said. Whatever his opinion is, he's in the group, whether it's the 5 or 20%.
Number two, I think it's way more than 5%.
Maybe.
It could be as high as 20%. That's a gut feeling I have based on life experience and all other things that need to go into that mix. Your education, experiences. I said life experience.
Yeah. Listen, whether it's 5 or 20%, this guy is in that group because I've had to explain things multiple times because he calls in all angry, attributing the worst possible faith interpretation of what I said. So, okay, anyway, it's maybe 5%, maybe 10. We'll look into that. We have a great bonus show for you today. Unfortunately, and this is really unfortunate, as predicted, what's going on in Russia-Ukraine is giving China some ideas. And Taiwan has now raised its alert level. We're going to talk about that. Also, Justin Trudeau has ended his use of the Emergencies Act related to the Canadian trucker convoy, saying it's no longer necessary. There were people saying this is the beginning of a permanent Emergencies Act. There was no evidence of that, and Trudeau has already ended it. And lastly, the International Space Station program is ending, and we're going to talk about what comes next. All of those stories and more on today's bonus show. I would love for you to sign up and get instant access. Sign up at Join Pacman.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
RCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
My fellow Americans,
I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet, because...
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
State.
As the Russian army moves in on Kyiv and threatens to topple the Ukrainian government, the Ukrainian military is urging citizens to make Molotov cocktails to attack the approaching Russian army. We'll speak with a Ukrainian journalist in Kyiv and a Ukrainian peace activist who just fled the country.
I feel that I fail after many years. I spent a lot of time and a lot of forces and a lot of strength and a lot of time for peace building, for promoting peace, for dialogue, for mediation through different groups. And now all this not useful anymore because we are under the attack, under aggression.
Plus, Russian troops have seized the site of the 1986 Chernobyl nuclear disaster and have reportedly taken staff hostage. We'll look at what could happen if one of Ukraine's active nuclear plants is bombed or loses power.
We're also equally concerned about the four nuclear power plant sites, 15 reactors in total in Ukraine, which are operating right now. If any one of them were to be attacked or to melt down, they would release much more radioactivity than got out during the Chernobyl accident in 1986. So this could be a humanitarian catastrophe, not only for Ukraine, but also for Russia, Belarus, and all of Europe.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Columns of Russian tanks and armored vehicles are advancing on Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, and have reached the outskirts of the city after a second night of heavy Russian shelling and airstrikes. U.S. intelligence officials view the military offensive as a move to encircle Kyiv and topple the Ukrainian government, something they warn could happen within days. On Thursday, Russian President Vladimir Putin gathered Russia's wealthiest men for a meeting just hours after Russian forces began a sweeping attack on Ukraine by land, by air, and by sea. Putin said he had no choice but to attack in order to ensure Russia's security.
Everything that is happening is a desperate measure. They left us no other option. They've created such security risks that we couldn't react differently.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said he's remaining in the capital, Kyiv, despite threats to his life. On Thursday, he vowed to defend Ukraine while saying he's open to talks with Russia and discussing the issue of neutrality. Zelensky has ordered a full military mobilization with all men aged 18 to 60 ordered to remain in Ukraine to face possible conscription into military service. Elsewhere Thursday, Russian forces captured the Chernobyl nuclear power plant after a fierce battle, raising fears of a new nuclear disaster. The White House expressed alarm over what it called credible reports that staff at the Chernobyl plant are being held hostage. The United Nations warns over 100,000 Ukrainians have been displaced by Russia's assault, with thousands fleeing to other European countries. This is UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi.
The humanitarian consequences on civilian populations will be devastating. There are no winners in war. but countless lives will be torn apart. We have already seen reports of casualties and people starting to flee their homes to seek safety.
Across Russia, thousands of people risk police violence to protest Vladimir Putin's decision to invade Ukraine, despite government warnings that dissent would be met with severe punishment. Human rights groups say at least 1,800 people have been arrested at demonstrations in Moscow, St. Petersburg, and other cities across Russia.